So it's imperative that we, that like that there needs to be some balance between having, because familiarity is always going to be a part of our lives, like in small ways, but it can't be the central theme of your life. The moment it becomes the central theme of your life, then it's time for a checkup, a growth checkup.
And this is always what familiarity does. This is what always disruption does. Disruption always offends the people that are so baked into the story that they can't let go of it. Remember Napster when it came out? Remember how the music industry was up in arms at the disgust of how dare you digitize our music and share it? Well, guess what's happened?
There's work that must be done. So letting go of familiarity isn't just, we're not saying it in a blasé kind of way. We're not saying like, just drop it. We're saying that there's a process of reconfiguration that happens that allows you to enter into the future as a better and different person, more aligned with who you want to be. Welcome to The Expansive Podcast. My name is Eric Kruger. I'm a keynote speaker, author, and always joined on this expansive journey by my co-pilot and co-host, fellow keynote speaker, fellow author, but most importantly, and if you know, for the both of us really, dog lovers, John Sonne. John, brother, how are you?
Yes, I think I should start with that.
Start with, as a priority.
Dog lover, John Sonne, human. I think it should come right before.
Yeah, I agree.
I fall more and more in love with them every time I see them. It's an unending amount of love that these dogs allow
us. It's almost like the Expansive Podcast. It's just slowly and slowly becoming more and more of a dog podcast. And
becoming a dog podcast.
At some point, you're going to tune into the Expansive, and it's just going to be us talking about dogs. And you're going to be like, "Is this the Expansive? We're like, where am I?
What did dog teach us about teamwork? Yeah. And what did dogs teach us about leadership? And what did dogs teach us about living a more expansive life? And in fact, we could do pods on each one of those because they all have merit.
Listen, before we get into your week,
all good.
A quick shout out to some of our listeners in Malta and in the Seychelles. We were trending this week in the top 10 charts in both of those regions, countries. Geography is not my best. So I'll actually, you should just do this segment, I think.
Yes, I'll do the geography from now on. We know this about you.
So those are
countries.
Big shout out to our listeners over there. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, what's happening for you?
Yes,
what's been?
Thank you. And the week before, we should have got a shout out to South Africa because we're top 10 in South Africa. So big shout out. But you know the thing with podcasts is you're competing against Joe Rogan. Like everybody's competing against Scott Galloway. Everybody's competing against the best. There's no borders
for sure.
So to be in the top 10 of everywhere, it really means that people in that country are listening to you over all those big names, which is a huge, huge...
And to be honest, I have access to the back end and I get to see all the charts that we are in. And so like we always mention the top 10, but there's probably about 60 charts that we are in at any one point. But we're sitting at various levels, right? You know, like 200th or whatever.
Don't say that. No, never. Look, never. I don't want to know that. That means half a person listened to 4 minutes.
200 out of 120 million podcasts. I'll take it.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, okay. Yes. But then with the way you say it is we're in the top 7% of the world's podcasts in that country.
I hear you.
You know, yes. Yeah, you can, you play around with the numbers, make it sound impressive, even when it's not. Jeez, I sound like KPMG all of a sudden.
Smart, yes.
Yes, okay.
So tell us about your week. Well, not even your week, just tell us about your day. Election day.
Yes, today is election day in South Africa. I find myself really lucky to be back here just haphazardly, without even trying to be back in for elections. Yeah, it went really well. I think it's really important. I think as I'm getting older, I was looking inside my ID book. I still have a green ID book because they won't give me an ID card because I wasn't born in South Africa. Anyway, I was looking at it. And I've been voting with that same ID book since the very first election. And I was like, I've done 7 elections since in that ID book. And I was reminiscing of just just how it's been. And also, as I'm getting older, the incredible privilege that you realize it is just to even have a voice inside your country. That's, and I saw a map of Africa, and South Africa seems to be really one of the only countries in the whole of Africa that has a full working democracy. And so, yes, we have our problems in the country, but geez, what an amazing thing to be able to do that. So it was fantastic. Yeah. How's it for you?
Yeah. We stood in the sun for about 4.5 hours. And it's always just like, I get a bit frustrated because I feel like no one takes initiative at these like polling centers. You know, we had two lines, so A to L and then M to Z. And every time pensioners came or people with babies came, they would all be put into our line first, that they weren't splitting them across lines. And so the M to Z line was like flying, and then our line was just very slow. But yeah, stood in that line 4.5 hours, cast a vote. Always feels good to do that, to come out on the other side and you have your little mark and you feel like you've done something meaningful for the day. So yeah, I'm very happy. Mm. And then afterwards, best part of the day is we took the dogs for a pizza and park date. So quickly popped to them with two Radloff and then had some pizza in the car with them. So very cool.
Oh, that's so cool. Lucky guys. Yeah. Best. What is that? When I come back, I want to be a dog inside a young couple's life that have done well, that have decided not to have kids. Like that dog's life is like super privileged and also super modern, I guess, you know. People haven't really treated dogs like you guys treat dogs. Like even me, like modern people.
It's called dinks.
Oh, what's that?
You're a dink. Dual income, no kids.
Oh, okay. Well, but there's no dog dink mentioned there. So just dink.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah. Okay. So yeah, I think that it has to be adapted for the dog.
Yeah, I think they need to have a dog thing there. Yes. Yeah, yeah. The double income, no kids. Yeah, I suppose gay people used to be, I mean, lots of people having gay kids in gay couples, but gay couples were all dinks, eh? And they were, geez, amazing homes, yeah, and holidays, and because there's no school fees.
Amazing incomes, yeah.
Yeah, amazing incomes, yeah.
Listen, brother, so we are very fortunate in that this week we are starting to ramp up the Expansive Pod in some different kind of ways. And it's largely due because we have an amazing producer that has come on board. We mentioned it last week. Robin is now part of the Expansive Pod. And so what you'll hear this week as a listener on the pod is we are introducing some new segments. There's a bit more structure to the pod as well. And so the very first segment that we are introducing is called Expansive Insights. And so this is really going to be focused on just some incredible insights around the future. It's going to be very sort of rapid fire. We don't want to spend too much time on it, but we do want to bring people's attention to some of the amazing things that are happening in the world that they need to be taking note of. And the very first one is from Elon Musk. And so if you haven't seen this recently, his startup XAI has now raised $6 billion. $6 billion. And this makes them the second biggest AI startup at the moment. So they are valued now at $24 billion, which is pretty incredible. So you have, in the startup space, you really have three companies, right? You have Anthropic, which is building Claude. You have OpenAI, which we all know, building ChatGPT. And then you have XAI now that just in, like, they've been in existence for about a year and now already valued at $24 billion. And so, of course, what this just tells us is like the race for AI dominance is really heating up. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, look, what I have a friend who helps me make investments. And he says to me often on the Zoom call, never bet against a billionaire. Never bet against a billionaire. Yeah. Like the billionaire knows, like he's done something or she's done something, understands the ability to manage that much money energetically. And Elon Musk is just, whatever you think of him, he is a machine. I mean, this is what, his sixth company? I don't know what it is. It's like, I mean, did you have time? He has 10 kids, bro. Six companies worth billions. I don't know how many ex-wives. I mean, the guy's just juggling. I mean, I'm just juggling everywhere. So what do I think? I think I'm building a new talk called AI Frontiers. And part of the talk is where I describe the idea of robots and the ability for robots to become sentient. And as I'm doing the research around how robots could become quite human-like in the next 15, 20 years, I mean, even earlier, I mean, I don't know, timelines, we don't know. But the thing that really got me was when I did the research around the data inputs into robots. And it's the data that allows them to become more human-like. And who's got more data than anybody else? Elon Musk. Why? He's been collecting data from the cars since the beginning of the cars on the road. Every one of his robots, every one of his AI, all the ideas have all been fed by this incredible, I think it's 200 petabytes, if I'm not mistaken, of data that he's collected through the cars that will automatically be uploaded into the robots, automatically be opened up into XAI. I mean, and so everybody else is there using AI data from the internet. And I mean, OpenAI got into trouble because they used YouTube because for Sora, but they couldn't say it, but obviously they did. Where else are you going to get video from? Elon Musk is picking up data from Twitter and from all his cars. I mean, it's just, he's got such a long game. He's playing such a long game that all of us aren't, like, we're not privy to understanding what he's doing. So, wow, hats off to him.
And, you know, I think if you are seeing this and you're not sure what it means to you as well, it's like there's no escaping what's coming. You know, you have these big three startups that are now building in the AI space, and you can see there's just more and more money being put behind these companies. But then apart from that, you also have Microsoft is building at like an incredible pace into their own ecosystem. Google is obviously, you know, like we just saw their latest announcements and people made these sort of memes where they cut together all the times that they said AI during their presentation. And it goes on for like 2 or 3 minutes and it's just AI, 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 like the whole, for the entire presentation, because that's all they care about. And then of course, Meta, you know, so we have these big, huge companies that are building in the space. At the same time, we have these massive startups that are building in the space. And so what it just tells you is that we had some hype cycles in the past, things like Metaverse, where we had lots of hype behind it and it kind of went away. And like, if you were trying to actively build things in that space, it probably didn't work out for you in the way that you wanted it to, or, you know, it might be coming down the road at some point, but it's not. No one is thinking about it today. No one is hosting parties in the metaverse anymore. But artificial intelligence is not something you can ignore. And so you either need to be thinking about how to build with it in your business, or you need to be thinking, how do I upskill myself? Because in a different article, I also saw that people who are AI literate earn a lot more in the marketplace at the moment compared to people who aren't. So already you just being able to upskill yourself in that space makes you more valuable to the group, to the society. So don't ignore it. Like, don't ignore it. Like, get involved, get excited, start playing around with the tools, just get into it. So that's the first bit of the expansive insights. One more quick one is Neuralink. And for those of you who don't know what Neuralink is, Neuralink is a company also founded by Elon Musk. So he's featured twice in today's expansive insights. In 2016, he founded this company. They are all focused on inserting chips into the brain that does a variety of functions. So it's to help people essentially interface with computers, like through by just thinking about it. But also down the road, it's about mobility and all these kind of things. So they call it a brain-machine interface. And the big news that has come out this week is that the FDA has now greenlit the second implant to happen. So the first implant already happened, and we've actually been seeing lots of news about how well it's been going with this guy. The guy's name is Noland Arbo. He's a 30-year-old quadriplegic patient, and like you've seen him recently, you know, move the cursor on his computer with his mind only, and it's incredible what he's doing.
Play chess, answering messages. Yeah, he's doing a whole. I mean, he's like doing normal people stuff.
And the funny thing is, the funny thing is that he's multitasking. So, like, the moment you give someone access to a PC, even if it's their mind, he's already multitasking. But the big news is, like, now they've greenlit for the second patient to receive it. And this is huge, man. I mean, like, you know, you are unlocking a person's entire life. Someone like him, you know, for who communication and just accessibility to incredible things like the internet has been impossible, all of a sudden, like, you're opening up their world. And I think it's incredible to be able to connect even people like that to all the amazing technology that we have.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think the good way to think about it is, remember the first time you ever saw a screen? It was probably at a cinema. And the second time you saw a screen, it was a TV. And the third time you saw a screen, it was a cell phone. And then it was an iPad. And then it was glasses. And then it was a brain implant. And so you got to realize it's like these screens coming closer and closer and closer. Technology is coming closer and closer and closer and closer. And now it's embedded in us. And so, yes, I think it's a scary prospect to have some machine inside you and a chip that's controlled by other people that could put signals into your brain that you don't really want to have. But remember that propaganda has been doing this to us since the beginning of time. It's just been doing it from the outside. This is a different version of it. And I don't think it's always going to be bad because, you know, you can also access good information and knowledge. It's not always propaganda. But I think to be able to think about this in order to help blind people, deaf people, quadriplegic people, handicapped people, have a new sense of self around this. And one of the most emotional videos that OpenAI put out was that blind guy who now uses his cell phone to tell him when to call the cab, wave the cab down and what he's looking at. And just think about being blind and having this new thing that's an assistant that's always with you, telling you where you're going and what it looks like. And are you kidding me? That is life-changing. So, you know, big up to Elon. I don't know where he comes from, but whatever he's doing, he's seeing things in a much bigger way, much broader way, much deeper way, much more futuristic way. And I often joke, you know, he's come from the future to help us get back to the future in many ways. And so big ups to him and for him helping all these people, you know.
Quick note before we move on is that what's quite interesting is that the chip has to be implanted into your brain, obviously. It's like the size of a coin. But the wires has to be so meticulously placed that they've had to develop a machine that can input and implant this little disc because human hands are just too finicky. So they've had to actually design something that helps to implement it just purely because of the sort of finesse that is needed. And if you just think about that, dude,
have you seen the brain, the amount of neurons that are wiring and firing together? There's trillions. Mm. It is like a sea of these lines that are just connecting. Your brain's just this connection of electrical circuit. And so, I imagine it has to be as thin as that and as precise as that, obviously. So, yeah, wow. Welcome to the future.
Cool. So, yeah, well done. That was our very first Expansive Insight segment. That went well. Thank you for that. All the listeners are getting a bit of a meta approach to the podcast today.
Yeah, we're talking to them through the process that we're changing. It's like, this is what we're changing. We are helping them assimilate.
At the Expansive, we bring our listeners along on the entire journey. We are transparent about the entire process.
Yeah.
Okay, so on to the main segment for today, dude. And I think we are jumping into something that you posted this week and give us some context and let's go from there.
Well, you know what brought it about? It was actually you and my discussion and a lot that I've been seeing around Terrence Howard. And Terrence Howard is this very good-looking, smooth actor guy that has gone onto Joe Rogan that has, challenged everything we know about everything, really, at the building blocks of reality in many ways. And there's been such backlash. And there's been a range. I've watched a range of backlash happening from an extreme that everything he says is rubbish all the way through to people nitpicking at one or two things that he didn't get right, which means that everything is wrong. So, and then you have right on the other side, you have this other sort of swing to says, I don't care what anybody says. I absolutely agree with him to the point of saying, I agree with some and I agree with not. And so there's a scale, right? And it always makes me have a quiet laugh to myself when the people that he's challenging with his theories are the ones that are taking the most offense. And this is always what familiarity does. This is what always disruption does. Disruption always offends the people that are so baked into the story that they can't let go of it. Remember Napster when it came out? You remember how the music industry was up in arms at the disgust of how dare you digitize our music and share it? Well, guess what's happened? And so because it just doesn't even sit into our brain. So today I wanted to talk about familiarity and I made a video about familiarity because I think as I'm getting closer to 50, many amazing things are happening to me, but I'm also many, many, in many different ways, waking up to a lot of the rule sets and familiar stories and tradition that we have always held on to as what is right and what is wrong. And as I am waking up to it, I'm starting to realize that these stories that we are holding on to are just familiar tradition habitually put into our societies that we somehow defend and even go to war to. So we wanted to dedicate a podcast to familiarity. And that's what I did with my video that I made from Turkey. And when I'm sitting in audiences, I see it all the time. Is there such a need to go and defend familiarity? And I'm going to end off this little piece of an intro with Dr. Joe saying, and he says, some people become addicted to lives they don't even like. And what does that mean? It means that we defend familiarity over anything else. And the best way you can live your life is to have strong opinions held loosely. Because one, the past is not always right. Just because it's from the past and because it's been done for 100 years and 1,000 years, it doesn't mean it's right. It just means it was right for that time. It doesn't mean it was wrong either. It just means it was right for that time. And I think that's what we need to get our heads around, is that, well, you know, and people are like, no, but marriage or whatever it is, and we'll get through all the points. But well, that was then. That was before all the things that have changed now. And we have to be able to have strong opinions held loosely so that we can always engage with information with an open mind, take what we like and disregard what we don't like, rather than trying to fight about the aspects that we don't like, because all you're saying to the world is that I'm not adaptable. I don't even want to engage with anybody else's way of thinking. So that's today's pod.
Yeah. And I look forward to it. I think, you know, it's kind of the theme that runs through the pod anyway, which is that in order to progress, you need to leave behind the old. And we've spoken about that many, many times, is that whenever there are new things that are on the horizon, it always starts with something having to end. And that ending is usually quite painful, which is why we don't want to engage with it. And I think what makes it very challenging, especially today, is that we are in the process of defining and redefining everything from gender to societal norms to how business is done. And it's very difficult if you've been used to a certain frame or a certain mental model for many, many, many years, you know?
If not many years, generationally.
Like
seeped into your DNA.
That's it. But I actually think what you were saying at the start is really important, which is that traditions are being challenged, you know? And I think what the bigger thing behind that for me, the bigger movement behind that, isn't necessarily the tradition being challenged. It is that people are waking up to the idea that they have more choice. That just because in the past someone said, this is the way to do it, that now they go, well, okay, it's not that I don't have to do it that way. And it's not that you are right and you are wrong. It is that you get to choose. And I think that's the powerful thing happening. It's like you get to choose. There are challenges with that process as well, which I think we can maybe chat about a bit later. But maybe we can use that as a bit of a movement into the next part of what you wanted to say about familiarity.
Sure. Yeah, cool. So let's start off with understanding that your future is shaped by how much you are able to change. Just remember that if you aren't able to change, your future stays exactly like where you've come from. Like there is no reason for it to change. And it's only going to be a reflection of your ability to change. Bashar says that when you look in a mirror, the mirror doesn't smile at you first and then you start to smile. You have to smile for the mirror to smile. So what are you waiting for? You're waiting for the mirror to start smiling before you smile? Obviously not. Your future is a reflection point of your current way of thinking, acting, and feeling. And so the more familiar your future is, the less you've changed. That's as simple as it is. If your future keeps looking the same as it, well, then what do you think is going to happen? Well, I'm still not making enough money. Well, I guess the common denominator is you. And so what you have to realize is the more unknown your future is, the more you're in the process of growth. The more you release the idea that you need to control that future, the more you are in the process of growth. And Elizabeth Gilbert said it brilliantly, and I love how she put it. She says, oh, darling, you never had control. You just had anxiousness.
She's the author of Eat, Pray, Love.
Eat, Pray, Love. Yeah. And she's the one. And if you think about it, is we have mistaken anxiety for control. Because you think because you're anxious, you're in control. You're not. There's no control. In fact, it's the worst way of control because you're not really controlling. The only thing you are controlling is that addiction to anxiety. And so it's the only thing that you have to do. So let's remember that when you are able to release familiarity, do you know what happens to you? You become calm. That calm allows confidence. That confidence allows better decision-making. That better decision-making allows you to arrive into new worlds, accessing new experiences, and guess what? Elevating, moving, growing, which is what we all want. But if we don't have calm, we don't have confidence, what we are is addicted to this need for familiarity. So let's start off with the first one.
There's a paradox to familiarity, which is that familiarity, I think for most people, feels pretty good initially. You know, because you go the same routes, you do the same things. And like, we know that the human brain craves certainty, which is what familiarity gives you. It's like, I know what to expect. Nothing is going to come out and be weird and strange.
Not the human brain. A high beta brainwave in a high beta brainwave, you seek certainty. In an alpha brainwave, you seek unknown. It's your brainwave that allows you to access certainty or uncertainty.
Yeah, sorry. So that familiarity initially feels good until it doesn't, you know, and that's when I wrote Dangerous, that's what I noticed, is that that familiarity becomes complacency, and that complacency becomes bored. And the moment you hit that state, you're like there is zero, like to your point, there's zero growth happening. In fact, you're not even stagnant. At that point, you are actually devolving. You know, you are falling behind in terms of how the world is evolving and where the world is going. But you're also falling behind in terms of like every day you lose out on not growing is a day you lose out on not growing into your potential. And so it's imperative that there needs to be some balance between because familiarity is always going to be a part of our lives, like in small ways, but it can't be the central theme of your life. The moment it becomes the central theme of your life, then it's time for a checkup, a growth checkup.
Check out, something to snap you. Yeah. Look, I use that analogy in my first book called Peeing in Your Nappy. You know, when you initially pee in your nappy, it's nice and warm and familiar and relieving. And within 30 seconds, you smell like pee. And now you're stuck. Now you don't know what to do. Now you smell like pee and you're an adult and it's embarrassing. So stop peeing in your nappy. But
I can't say I remember ever having experiences, but I mean, no.
Didn't you?
I don't remember.
No, but it was a hypothetical story. Obviously, it's hypothetical. Let's start with the first one. And the first one, you know what? The first one, I'm going to start with the one that's the most challenging. Religion. Religion, for me, is a set of laws and realities and teachings that arrived thousands of years ago. Some hundreds, some thousands. I don't know. I don't agree with it. I don't agree with the concept that we have to be following one rule, one way of thinking. I just don't believe in any of that stuff. And I find people, again, go to war because of religion, because of something that was said thousands of years ago. And now what you're doing is you punish people that are not part of your religion. You judge people that are not part of your religion, which in fact is exactly the opposite of what your religion says, because your religion is most probably saying love everybody, which is what you're supposed to be doing, but you only love people that dress like you, look like you, act like you, and pray like you. And so we've created such havoc inside this world of religion. And for me, it's familiarity. So what you do is you stay familiar. You do what you need to do inside your religion. You go where you need to be seen. So the first one that I think needs to be questioned, and also something to just understand, that there's other choices out there. You can connect to God by yourself. You can connect to whatever you want by yourself. You don't have to go through those processes. So for me, the first one is religion. I know you also have a past with religion, and yours is a different reality or experience to mine. But you know, religion, I think, is just a familiar story that we hold on to.
Well, you know, like I said, I think it's about being able to question everything and really starting from a point of curiosity. And some things will be for you and some things won't be for you. But my bigger question is, did you make that decision for yourself? And that's ultimately what it comes down to. So, you know, I don't mind what religion you are. If I don't believe in that religion, then that's totally fine. As long as it means something to you and it doesn't interfere with how you show up in the world. It doesn't make you, trying to be very respectful.
Superior.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Superior. That's what happens. People do it to get the superiority. It's like, hey, I know the way you don't. Let me help you. Like, get the hell out of here. What are you helping me for? You're the one who's lost. I'm not lost. Why are you trying to help me? I'm not going to you and going, hey, but you're lost. Like, leave me alone.
Yeah. I think as long as you make the decision for yourself, then that's good. Yeah.
The second one is alcohol. And I know we spoke about your amazing whiskey collection, and I think that's awesome. And I think that you're a respectful drinker. I don't think you're a disrespectful drinker. I think that also it's nice to release some of that tension. And I think to a certain extent, drinking bits of alcohol at times when you can manage it, absolutely great. But again, as we realize that there's more choice in today's world, there's other ways to change your brain waves and to go through that process. And most people do the worst things when they're drunk. They beat people, they get into fights, they make mistakes sexually, it's chaotic what happens on the outside, on the other side of alcohol. Now, I think the worst part of this is this idea that we've made alcohol so normal in our society that inside of townships and poor areas around the world, it is causing such deep havoc inside families and social structures that it's just unacceptable. It's unacceptable that we've allowed the legality of something to be allowing us to spread it widely within poor, uneducated people to cause such deep pain. It's unfair. It's not right. It should not be allowed to be done. And the people that market alcohol, it is disgusting because what you've done to yourself is you've removed yourself from the pain that it's causing, saying, well, they're adults. They can make their own choices. Well, yeah, that's true, but it's wrong. The energy behind it is wrong. So for me, alcohol, it's familiar. So people are saying it's okay to drink, but my God, if you smoke a joint, there's something definitely wrong with you. Oh my God, you do magic mushrooms. Jeez, you're off the rails. So we have to just get away from the fact that that's the only way.
I think that's a very good point, which is that it falls into the same category. It's a drug. It falls into the same category. It's all these things that for many people are taboo, but the one is somehow okay and the others are not. When it comes, I have a very interesting relationship with alcohol, which is that the reason I enjoy it is because I don't drink it for the sake of alcohol. I enjoy it because of the mastery behind it. I've said this many times on the pod, I love the story behind it. I love that there's a wine farm 5 kilometers from my house and I've been on that farm and I've seen what they've done with the vines. And, that's what I'm after more than, I'm not trying to drink to get drunk. I'm 40. I think I'm mostly responsible.
I don't think age has got anything. I know many alcoholics and 40 and above, bro.
Having just turned 40, I'm going to use that for whatever I can. as a sign of maturity.
You're mature. You're so mature.
Yeah.
Yes, you're so mature.
I think to your point, it is familiar for many people, and because that. We discount other things that might be more beneficial, things like shrooms, for example. But that is unfamiliar to us. And so one class of drugs are fine, but another class isn't. Yes. Cool.
And remember, when you want to bring legality into it, remember that slavery was legal. Marrying 12-year-old girls was legal. All these were legal. Legality means nothing, bro. Legality has changed with the times. You have to contextualize things. And so legality is not something to work with. And plus, we don't even trust the pharmaceutical industry anymore. So why are we trusting these people that are putting these laws out? Even when you said the FDA has now approved it. I'm like, I've seen so many programs about the FDA being funded by Pfizer and Merck. I'm like, what? I don't know what the FDA means even. You know what I mean? It's so convoluted. Yeah. So anyway, okay, next one. Next one is wearing a suit. And look, we obviously are guys here. Right. So are we guys. I don't know about girls. Like somebody said to me, I made a post the other day. It's like, what about women? I'm like, I don't know about women. I'm not a woman. So like, I don't know how to speak on a woman's behalf. And God forbid we do speak on woman's behalf. Then we said mansplaining. So I'm not going to even go there. But wearing a suit, let me explain. Wearing a suit. I heard a while back, and I don't know if I said it on the pod, but why did French aristocrats, the men, wear high heels? And the reason they did that was to try and, besides everything else they did, the rest of the outfits they had, but what they did was they're trying to get away as far away from the person that was working the field. So immediately could tell they weren't a peasant. So when you think of a suit, the suit came out of a place where I want to get away from the fact that nobody must think I work in a factory. I work in an office. So that was the relation between why you started wearing a suit. And now we're still wearing suits. Why? What is that tie doing there? Why must we wear that? And what value is it adding? So yes, we're just familiar. You must be smart. You must wear a tuxedo.
I've seen you in a suit. You look good in a suit. You should not diss the suit.
I'm not dissing the suit. I'm not dissing the suit. But even you thinking I look good in the suit is your familiarity talking. Do you not see what you're doing there?
But you still look good in the suit. I mean, I can objectively decide.
I'm not dissing a suit.
I can objectively decide if you look good in something or not.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. But all I'm saying is the idea that smart is suit.
That it has to be a certain
disagree.
Way. Yes.
Disagree.
Yes, yes, yes.
Disagree. Okay. Disagree. 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 Irritates me, that idea. Okay, anyway, next. The next one for me is, you know what's so funny? It's so funny. When I tell people that lab-grown meat is going to be coming, and people are like, oh, I'm not going to eat lab-grown meat. I'm like, bro, do you want to hurt more animals? No, I don't care. I'm not going to eat lab-grown meat. I'm saying it's the same thing. It's in fact might be even be cleaner because there won't be any hormones in it. There won't be any stress in it. There won't be any cortisol in it. It will be pure meat. We all love meat. So yes, we want to not hurt animals. Why don't you want to eat lab-grown meat? Oh, familiarity. That's all it is. It's familiarity, nothing else.
It's also a marketing issue. It's a marketing issue. They need to, you're comparing things between, you know what I mean? Like you're comparing something that is like natural in the farm versus something that's grown in the lab. Like you need to find better ways of positioning things for people as well.
Can we just describe natural? It's not natural. What we're doing to animals is not natural. No, it's not.
I won't argue that, but they still
it
in
used
fields,
to be maybe
like in our minds.
No, they're not in fields. Yeah, no, yeah. They're not in our minds. In the picture on their thing, they're in fields. Go look at where the pigs are. They born in cages, die in cages. That's not normal. So the idea we have around what those cows and pigs and chickens are doing compared to the reality of what's happening to it is a very big difference. I have a huge dilemma in eating animals, and I do, but I have a huge dilemma with it. I don't want to be doing it. So familiarity of the ability for us to think things, even with our food, is really important. Anyway, that's just another point I have to work on.
Yeah, but I think it's good. No, I think it's a good point, but I also think that it's important for people who are driving innovation to think about how they bring certain things across to us. Because what you are asking people to do is you're trying to get them to discard an old paradigm and accept a new one. And the way you do that, and you've spoken about this on the pod before as well, isn't to just force them into your way of thinking. It's like you have to bring them along on the journey. And so, you know, even if I think of when, you know, at some point, I don't know, I don't think they do it in SA anymore, or I don't know if they've ever done it here, but definitely when I've traveled, I've seen that they put like these pictures of cancers and things on cigarette boxes. And like, I don't know to what extent that's been successful because people are like, I've seen, you know, smokers and they sit on the table and they have these pictures. They don't even try and hide them. They don't actually care because, you know, it's more important for them what they get from that. They can overlook what it might do at some point in the future.
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
They'll have their own ideas of, oh, only one in X amount of people might get it, or oh, I'll be fine, or whatever. Like, that's not the way that you bring people into the future by saying to them, well, you are right and I'm, or you are wrong and I'm right. Just do the new thing. And that's why I'm saying it's almost like a marketing thing. It's like, yeah, how do you bring lab grown into something more enticing?
Yes. Okay. Fair enough. Okay. I get that. But if you get a choice in the future of eating lab grown and eat normal animals, I'm judging you. Hard. Okay, next. Okay, next is, and this one again is a bit contentious. And you know why they're all contentious? Because of familiarity. Genders. genders. Let people be what they want to be. Leave them. If they're not hurting you, leave them. So what? Like, look, you don't want to go too far. I get that. You know, there was this, on Bill Maher, they had this teacher in Canada that was a guy that would wear these double G boobs and then go to school in a dress in these fake double G boobs. And he's like, look, I understand you want to be trans. That's okay. But come on. Like, do you have to do that at school to 14-year-old boys? Like, that's not like, I guess the context is a little bit out, right? So yes, I get it. It can go too far. But ultimately, 20 years ago, when you told somebody you were gay, there was, oh my God, I can't believe it. Now it's normal. Who cares? Like, you want to be gay? Could be gay. So what? And so I think genders is the next level of that. And I know families that have gone through gender changes, and it's been so hard for them. You know, it's not an easy process. When the child's taking a lot of strain, and the dad of one of the kids said to me, he says, I don't want to do this. Like, are you joking? Like, this irritated me from the beginning when my kid was sort of telling me and asking me, but my kid didn't stop for 10 years. Like, 10 years my kid's been doing this. Like, eventually the family's like, okay, we got to change. And so it's not an easy process. And for us to be judging it, we have no idea what's going on the inside, you know? Again, I know there's left field, so let's not go there. But it's okay. Like, I don't know. I just think people just be themselves. Just be what you want to be. It's okay.
I almost feel, you know, so I was reading a quote from Seth Godin this morning that said, you know, you're going from version, like version two to version three is a step change in anything. But it's really that, like, we see these big step changes. It's normally that there are small things that happen that lead us from version two to version three. And I think for most people, accretion, for most people, there's a band within which change is fine, you know? And within that, we can deal with it. But the moment it goes beyond that, like too far left, too far right, now it becomes too much for us to deal with. And unfortunately, I think people are also always going to just push the limit. And so there might be certain things that, like, they make sense from a change point of view, but then certain things perhaps don't make sense. And I think that's also something to talk about, right? Which is not always easy to know, is that not all change is good change. Like, I think some change, yeah. And so I also don't want us to come across as like, oh, like, if you don't accept change just because it's happening, then, like, what the hell's wrong with you? Because there are also certain changes that we should fight for that might be leading us down the wrong path, that might not be the best way forward.
Of course. I agree with that. Yeah. I do agree with that. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm not speaking specifically about gender, obviously. I'm just talking about it in sort of a broader sense.
But yeah. I think, like, social media has really affected us negatively. I think it's done a positive for us. But the more you look at it, what's happened to us, we all look to our phones, bro. It's a horrible thing. Eh? You're on your phone all the time. That's not a good thing. I saw this thing in Amsterdam that you put your phone outside, you go for 4 hours inside a library, no phones, just coloring books, just like back in the 80s, bro, just no phones. And I'm craving that to a certain extent. I really feel that is the new thing, is that we have to start to unplug a little bit. Okay, so two more and then we're done. The next one is, look, and you're a master of this, so I don't want to diss you on this, but it's marriage. So look, I keep telling people that I haven't been successful at it, and I've tried a few times, and it just doesn't suit my personality. And guess what? It doesn't suit my dad's personality either. And it's funny because he's on his fourth marriage. I don't think he's that good at it. And I've tried it a few times, not good at it. And what I always thought was, what a failure I am. I always think, shit, man, what's wrong with me? And I was in this self-deprecating place. I don't want to hurt the girls. I don't want to. There's no maliciousness around it. It's just the structure of it makes me feel claustrophobic in a way. And I don't know why it does. I've tried to think about it, and I still will continue to try and heal it. But when I start to make peace with the fact that it's okay not to be aiming at life partnership and marriage, such a huge weight came off my shoulders. And it was a very internal process that I had to go through. But when I look at you and Dan, and I look at other people that have got successful marriages, I'm really incredibly inspired by it. And I know how awesome it must be. And look, I've never experienced it, and I've never seen it. I've seen it with my mom and stepdad, but I never really grew up around it. So I see it and I'm like, wow, it's this amazing thing to be able to go through that sort of process, you know? to make peace with the fact that it's not for me, and then to give permission to other people that also realize it's not for them, it's just a wonderful thing to say, look, it's just not for me. And it's just because it's familiar doesn't mean it has to be continuous the way it's always been. So that's my piece on marriage.
Yeah, and I don't feel dissed by that at all, to be honest. And when I was listening to your video about it, obviously this is the one that stood out for me the most, because and I have been in the back of my mind just sitting with it. And I think that's where I ended up landing on, it's about choice. And it's about the fact that as we go through life, we also, like, we're not the same people. I mean, that's exactly what we're speaking about today, is that who you are 10 years from now isn't who you're going to be today. Hopefully, you know, like, we want you to change. All of us need to change all the time. And so it might be that it's not for you now, and it might be for you at a later point. It might be never for you.
That's actually true.
It might be that it's never for you.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And the bigger thing is that both of those scenarios are okay. That is, like, you do not need to buy into, just because the way it's been done like this, this is the way it's supposed to be. It can be right for you. It can be wrong for you. And I think I've been very fortunate, you know, for a long, long time, my thinking was always, I don't want to get married. I remember saying that to my friends all the time. I was like, I'd never want to settle down. I remember having conversations with so many girlfriends. I'm like, no, I'm the single dude. Like, you know, no one's going to win my heart type thing. I had many of those conversations. And then when I met Dan, like, it's been the easiest thing that I've ever had to go through from a relationship point of view. And she compliments me in so many ways. And, but.
Well, her geography is very good.
Her geography is excellent. So that's right. Yeah. But everything about her is excellent. So she
that's true.
She compliments
that's true.
All of it.
That's true. Yeah.
But I think I don't hold marriage as a gold standard. You know, I think that there are many ways that people can be together these days. And marriage is a very traditional thing. Like, even when I was thinking, like, why did we, so, like, because I was going down this rabbit hole, like, why did we get married? Like, why was that? And I think there's a formalization, there's a commitment that we wanted to go through, but there's other commitments that you can make as well that doesn't have to be marriage. And so I really think that it's, you know, you have to do what's right for you. And then on top of that, I do think marriage has become much harder. I think partnership has become much harder because of the social media world we live in, where, like, you almost have alternatives on tap. You know, if you feel like you want to see something else, you can go onto Tinder, or, you know, there's many options where you can find, like a short-term partner very quickly. You know, like, it's easy to do that. And then social media, and then, like, so I think there are so many, it's much harder these days to actually be good in a relationship than before.
I agree. So my last one is the concept of sacrifice and resilience. And we've always thought that we must sacrifice to become successful, and we must be resilient to become successful. And both of those oppose my new approach, which is follow your highest excitement every moment of every day with zero expectation, with maximum enthusiasm. In that equation, there's no sacrifice. The idea of sacrifice is you have to do something you don't like. Why? Why don't you just do the things you like more and more and more and more and more while building into something? Now, the only caveat here is that if you haven't found what you're on earth for, yes, you have to find that first. That's the almost like the gateway. And once you go through that gate, there's no sacrifice. It's only exploration. And exploration doesn't mean sacrifice. It's adventure. Is it hard? Yes, it can be hard. Like, I've got a trainer and his workouts are unbelievably difficult. And he makes me do things I've never done before. I hate it, but love it. So am I sacrificing? Yeah, I'm going through pain, but there's an overarching incredibleness because of it. Would I want to sit down and go through an Excel spreadsheet for 12 hours a day because that's the sacrifice I need to make for my business? No, absolutely not, in no way whatsoever. And so I think the first idea is that you must sacrifice. I don't know so much. I think what you've got to do is find your genius and then allow that to lead you, pull you, inspire you, elevate you into the next step. So the equation has to change. And then underpinning the idea of sacrifice is the need for resilience. And you and I have spoken about resilience many times. And a big part of that my video that I made is this concept that you have to be grinding it and you have to be in resilience mode, which is a second prize to adventure. Resilience doesn't say imagination, doesn't say exploration, doesn't say uncertainty. It's like you gotta, even the word resilient, it's like, and when you say South Africans are so resilient. Like, why? Just rehearse anew. Why resilient? And so the familiarity of hard work and sacrifice and resilience is such an old school idea. And I'm not saying you're not going to work hard. We work hard, bro. You and I work very hard. I'm constantly working. But not for one second do I think I'm in sacrifice mode. Why would I don't? I'm a spoiled brat. I'm not going to sacrifice nothing. Spoiled. I don't want to sacrifice anything. I want to enjoy everything I want to enjoy. I saw something great the other day. It says, I'm here for a good time and a long time. Let's go. I'm not here for a good time. So I don't want to sacrifice shit. So those are my last two.
Listen. Yeah, that's great, man. Did you want to quickly recap, just run us through all of them again from top to bottom?
The first one was religion. Second one was alcohol. The third one was lab-grown meat. Then wearing a suit. Then genders, marriage, and then resilience and sacrifice.
Yeah, amazing. You know, I think what I've loved about this, and I'm hoping that this is something that listeners can also see, and I think it's always been quite... you know, obvious in our pods, is that like that list is a blend of kind of societal and personal,
yes, personal
familiarities.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's quite important, is that when we challenge our personal familiarities, it's tough. And often that those personal familiarities are you know, that they're inspired by years and years of conditioning, be that, you know, parents, be that religion, be that tradition, you know, societal expectations. And so the moment you start questioning those, it feels like you're questioning a much larger system, and it can be so tough to reconfigure it. But it's also one of the most courageous things you can do. And so what I'm trying to get at is, I hope that you can see the process in action here, you know, is that as you go through them, like there's the courage of going to explore them and the wrestling that comes with it, that it's never easy. It's never just, I'm letting go of that familiarity. There's a process behind it. And even a few times you use the words that I need to heal things about it. And, you know, there's work that must be done. So letting go of familiarity isn't just, we're not saying it in a blasé kind of way. We're not saying like, just drop it. We're saying that there's a process of reconfiguration that happens that allows you to enter into the future as a better and different person, more aligned with who you want to be.
Well said. Very good. It does take courage. But I think when you prioritize curiosity in your life, courage becomes sick. Like, it doesn't even feature. You don't even think you're being courageous. You're actually just going down the route of, hang on, I need truth here. And I remember when I moved away from my religion, my family religion, there was an uncomfortability in my family. There was an uncomfortability. And I think sometimes it still is to a certain extent, because the family's in that space and I've broken away from it. But slowly but surely I've accepted my perspective and my courage to step away from your inner circle of the people that love you the most. And that's a very tough thing to do. But ultimately, you're not here to be your family. You're here to be you. Your family is an aspect of you. And if you are not aligned with your family, why would you want to make that sacrifice of never, ever accessing yourself? You know, so it's a gift, but the gift requires some work and some internal dialogues. And remember last thing, is that if you're in a high beta brainwave and you're highly anxious, you can't be courageous. You have to calm yourself to become courageous. That calm gives you confidence to explore. And so you have to first create calmness, access your genius, then move into these places. If you haven't done that, all of this seems a little bit antiquated, and why would you want to do that, you know? Either way, that's the pod. It's been a long one.
Yeah, that's been amazing. Thank you so much, dude. And of course, we are ending off this week's pod with a quote of the week. So this is going to be a new feature on the pod as well. Every week, we want to leave you with a quote that leaves you inspired, that's nicely tied into the content as well. And the quote for this week, actually something I posted on LinkedIn, and that just happens to have a perfect tie-in, is that if we don't change, we don't grow. And if we don't grow, we aren't really living. That comes from Anatole France. So listen, it's been great, as always, evolving and changing and being expansive with you and with our listeners and going through the process of also moving away from what's been familiar for us with the pod and moving into new territories with that as well.
Oh, there we go. Whoa. Yeah. I saw that. Yeah. I like that.
And to everyone listening, as always, we deeply appreciate you spending your time with us. We know that you have the option of listening to millions of other podcasts, and the fact that you choose us is really special and meaningful to us. So thank you for that. You can head over to YouTube to see a bit more of the pod. We are doing all of this via video. So if you want to see our faces and get to know us even better, then that would be the way. That would be the way to do it.
Yeah.
Hey, I mean, you're just a voice inside someone's head. You know, they need to know what you look like.
But funny, you know, I've been listening to pods and I've been thinking, I wonder what they look like. And I've been going to YouTube. I've been actually slowly but going over to YouTube because sometimes they're explaining things and I can't see them on pod. You know. Come see our faces.
Yeah, you can subscribe there. You can leave us reviews on iTunes, on Spotify. We love receiving those. And until next week, we hope that you leave behind the familiar. We hope that you step into growth. Be expansive. See you again soon.
Ciao.